football on Off the Ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar David, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. We are officially at one more sleep stage until the 2026 World Cup. But more importantly, we are at the no more sleep stage for Gianni Infantino's opening press conference for the 2026 World Cup. And today we feel excited for the tournament. We're going to be going to Mexico. We're going to be going to New York on this evening's show. We're going to be chatting to Brad Friedel this hour. Although I've heard that Brad Friedel might have actually trained with St. Patrick's Athletic once upon a time. So maybe we won't talk to Brad Friedel about the World Cup whatsoever when we get him on the line this hour. Later tonight, Ben Symes is going to join us in studio to bring us his hipster slash avant-garde guide to the World Cup, where he's not allowed to mention Turkey and Dark Horse in the same sentence. We're also going to be talking some NBA with Kavitha Davidson ahead of Game 4 in the finals tonight. And Sue Ronan will join us as well to reflect once more on last night's defeat for Ireland in Grenoble. Our number is 087-918-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Eve Conway will be bringing you the News Round very shortly. Eve, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All good. And Arthur O'Dea is here as well. Evening, Arthur.
What's crack?
I believe for the first time, certainly in my stewardship of this show, we're doing a sticker pack on packing this hour as well, Arthur.
Not at all. This is the Ben Symes show, to be fair, this evening. It's very much him. It's very much him. Well, like, I didn't realise people were still as much into stickers and sticker books and stuff, but it's authentic. It's genuine. But he's buying them up. He's hoovering them up in every direction, trading them, buying them, doing whatever he's doing, robbing them. And he's going to be unmasking one of the packs he's bought later on. Unwrapping,
I guess.
It's not as satisfying a word as unboxing, but it's not a box.
Unveiling
also. Unveiling suggests he knows what's there.
Hmm.
That's the beauty. It's the jeopardy.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot.
What would it take, I wonder, for somebody to be truly stunned on air by what they've unveiled in their
stack? That's a good question. I don't know. Look, I suppose we'll find out. It'll probably be a little bit underwhelming. But good to listen to, but underwhelming for him.
Yeah, because you often see videos pop up on the internet of somebody on FIFA Ultimate Team who's just unpacked a golden Lionel Messi and they go absolutely crazy. And I just don't really know what that means. So I know even less about the Panini selection of stickers.
Were you ever a stickerman?
Once. One season, 0102, completed it, mate. Premier League.
Really?
Yeah. My mother sent off. She posted off for the remaining stickers that I was missing. That's a privileged childhood right there.
There seems to be some sort of stigma around that. I was kind of asking that. Yeah,
they're not having it now.
Yeah, they're not having it. Would you not just go and buy it? It's like, no, you can't buy it. You got to swap it. You got to get lucky through.
I didn't have many friends, you see.
I don't know if that's unique either. But yeah.
No, there was these meetups where you could like trade stickers for whatever. I think it was Merlin who made that particular edition. But I guess if you're like a 7-year-old child, you're probably unlikely as a parent to let your child go off and meet people to swap stickers for a day.
So you didn't do that. Sorry.
I didn't do that.
So she literally
sent off in the post for the remaining ones and then finish it off. Somewhere around at home, still one of my proudest achievements.
Wow. Is it your achievement, or when you're seven, is it your mother's achievement?
Listen, it was. I was given all the credit for it, and so I'm going to take all of that.
You're such a good boy, Owen.
Yeah, appreciate it. What's the general sort of temperature feeling around what's kicking off tomorrow? Because I'm very good at compartmentalizing, at like forgetting about the context of any sporting event if the sporting event is good enough. And I think the World Cup is, generally speaking, we'll see how 48 teams goes, generally speaking, the best sporting event in the world. But I'm struggling to compartmentalize everything at the moment because the United States are doing such a bad job of sports washing their own image.
Yeah, like I'd be with you. Yeah, because it feels like there was more of the critical pieces about Qatar before that. I just feel like on the show and stuff, we were doing more. It feels like it was coming up more. This almost feels like a little bit more. They were kind of just like, well, not what's the point, but like, we've all just accepted it's a bit dark. We'll just plough on. But I think to your point, effectively, like once it gets going, I'm kind of in. I'm not watching a lot of football kind of for the next few weeks. I guess the outside stuff will spill in, but it'll kind of just be part of the tapestry of the thing, I guess. I suppose nobody... Do we view the World Cup as a morally good thing in general? I mean, is it a good thing? I don't know. Like, the badness almost feels a part of it. I don't know. Long story short, like, I'm still looking forward to it. Not boycotting or anything.
Yeah. As in the darkness feels part of it because of the last two editions, including this one, or it's always been a part of it?
I guess, like, it depends what where you draw the badness from. Like, wasn't the Brazil one, there was, like, the amount of sort of infrastructure for, like, a month that was then never used. Like, all these things have such sort of knock-on effects to the climate and everything else. And, like, what's the thing of, like, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people travelling for this thing? And there's kind of whatever way you look at it, there's negativity in there. I suppose it's a little more surface level here in the last two, but what are we, Spain next and then Saudi Arabia? So that's not going away. Like, so I guess it is more than that. It's just part of it. It's just, there's like, again, which one was it, Chile in 62 with like the regime that was there? Again, the first one, I remember from reading Jonathan Wilson's book, that
well, it was Argentina.
Chile
was pre-Pinochet.
Okay. So 78. But 34 was like Mussolini's Italy.
Yeah.
Or was it 38? 34 or 38 was Mussolini's Italy. The other one was France. I think 34. So like, I guess like it's kind of, it's sewn in right from the beginning.
Yeah. Like, because, I mean, for me, one of the ridiculous images, because you have this presumption that anybody who's of a profile is going to be spared, you know, the brutality or any of the sort of awfulness that's associated with this World Cup. So it was actually really jarring to see Fabio Cannavaro in the middle of all of this when the Uzbekistan team were being thoroughly searched coming off the bus. Because you would think that Fabio Cannavaro being, you know, sort of a legend of the game and being, you know, a white European would not be subjected to that sort of thing. But of course, as manager of Uzbekistan, they were obviously told to come out, extend their arms, and they were given a fairly thorough search. Like, we've seen the situation with the Somalian referee being sent back. We know what's going on with the Iranian football team. It feels that all those situations are just kind of permeate into like a huge amount of the games, and it's impossible not to talk about if you're even on, you know, one of the official broadcasters broadcasting these games, because they are literal parts of the preparation for these teams. Like, if you're commentating on an Iranian game, for example, like, part of the context of that is, oh, they had to fly from Tijuana today to play this game. Like, that just feels really important. The context is so close to the actual football, way more so than Qatar, it feels. I can't speak for the historical World Cups, but it feels that those two things are just harder to divorce. And as I say, I'd be happy as Larry just to forget about all of this and just enjoy the football. But I think it's just going to be tempered as this thing continues to go by.
I think the fact that it's over three countries makes it all the more sort of stark, where you have, I think, Canada saying, well, we would welcome the Somalian referee. You have Mexico, you know, that's where the Iranians, I think they were saying, can we play our games in Mexico? And obviously that didn't work out. But Qatar, for all the kind of bad press going in, the bad press is the wrong word, but for all the controversy going into it, it's still a very small country. Whereas the scale of this World Cup across three countries over the continent of North America means that everything feels a lot bigger and thus badder. You know, that's at least my view on it.
Yeah,
it will. And I think to your point as well, yeah, the nature of people being so spread out is that you'll arguably, I guess you'll probably have an awful lot more voices because there'll be different people in loads of different places as compared, everyone won't be drawn towards the same things. And I guess there is, it's just like, yeah, to your point, like there'll be a lot of stuff to be going on everywhere and that news cycle will never sleep. Mm-hmm. So you just can't be, there'll be a constant churn, I suppose, of the latest controversy. But I guess you just don't, like, I just don't know where you'd be free from it in any sport, especially in a global stage. Like, you know, you're watching, great fun watching the Winter Olympics, and then you're kind of realising, like, with this ice skating, the load of the different athletes that are representing, I don't know, it's one of them, Georgia or somewhere else, like, they're all kind of effectively exiled, might not be the wrong word, but certainly emigre Russian skaters who can't do under their same thing, so went and representing a different country. And you're like, you're open all that up. It's like, but it's just the distance to it. I do think the fact that it's in I suppose primarily two of three English speaking countries from where we already consume so much of our kind of media and entertainment and everything else and know so many of the peripheral figures, that that does change it a little bit. That'll always intensify it. I don't know where, like, I know you're not suggesting it, but I don't know if you can't really, there's no sort of moral arc on how, is this one worse than the last one, which was worse than the last one? You know what I mean? It just feels a lot closer to home, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and more present in terms of how we talk about the football teams and, like, in Iran's case, like, getting a competitive disadvantage because of the geopolitical situation. Like, it feels so close. Patrick's been in touch to say, I, for one, won't be watching any match in the World Cup this year. We've had Russia, Qatar and the US. Who'll get the next one? North Korea. Is that defamatory to Spain, Portugal, Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina and Morocco? You're describing them as North Korean. And Owen's been in touch to say, is Ben also collecting the 12 stickers you get with bottles of Coke? I don't even drink it, but people are selling them for extortionate amounts online.
Yeah, no, he is. In a big way.
And on YouTube, is the World Cup 90 book on the shelf behind Owen complete? I think it is. I'll have a leaf through that a little bit later on. And Dermot Keenan says, oh, when I was listening to an American podcast earlier, and they're expecting the USMNT to make the quarterfinals. Is this blind faith thinking, or can the Poch factor do it? It'd be very interesting. I think there is a world where we could have USA versus Canada. Maybe, is it the first knockout game potentially if things line up, which would be a very interesting one. And the United States can play Iran if they both finish second in their group, which I want to see even more. We are going to be checking in with Mexico tonight to see what the situation is there. Also, a country not separated from controversy and, you know, a lot of distaste around this World Cup as well. Massive protests happening in Mexico City at the moment. So we'll get the latest on that as the show develops tonight. Eve, let's get into the news round, because some really good news coming out of the Katie Taylor fight and how tickets are flowing.
Yeah, so over 40,000 tickets have been sold for Katie Taylor's final fight at Crow Park. That's according to Eddie Hearn, her promoter. Pre-sale tickets went on sale this morning for her fight against Flora Pelly on September 5th. And Taylor's promoter, Matchroom Boxing, believe the event will sell out the venue. They're anticipating over 80,000 tickets to be sold, and then the remaining tickets go on sale this Friday.
I think the idea that Katie Taylor would struggle to sell out Croke Park had been mentioned so many times that I'd say a lot of people are going to be looking at this figure, panicking, thinking we need to get on this when the actual sale begins, because this thing is going to sell out.
40,000 is a lot. That's an incredible...
What a start.
I don't know how the... What did you have to do to pre-sale? Just register, or is it...
I presume so. Just
okay.
Yeah.
I kind of guess if that's the base, that you're having no problem at the very least making it uber successful, whether or not you get to whatever the limit is, the upper limit. But like, it's an insane amount of people for a first run before it goes in general, before you get all the kind of hangers on, or like people just on the kind of bandwagon closer to the time and stuff, that just, we'll go. You'd say that's, not to be too preemptive of it, but that's probably mission accomplished.
It seems that way.
40,000 alone would look amazing. Like, yeah. You just, whatever way you'd angle it, it'd be fine.
It's the oasis of 2026, I reckon. You're moving on to Ipswich then, Eve.
Yes, some breaking news there, as Kieran McKenna is stepping down as Ipswich head coach and will take a break from football. The Fermanagh man had been heavily linked with a move to the Fulham job, but it's understood he won't be taking over there or at any club in the near future. McKenna, who had guided Ipswich to three promotions in the last 4 years, says he wants to dedicate time to his family.
Okay, yeah. So when I saw this news initially, I had thought it was indeed the Fulham job that he was going to jump into, but you'd suspect that's not going to be his next role. But as soon as whoever wins the sack race in the Premier League next season wins that race, Kieran McKenna's hat's going to be thrown straight into the ring.
Do you think so? The language of it's interesting. Like, it seems like a very purposeful break, or am I kind of being too...
Well, I mean, sorry, from outside forces.
Oh, his name's going to be linked to it.
I don't know what's going on in his own head, or what's the reason for the break. It's a really hard job being a football manager. I could just explain it.
It is interesting, though, because you do think, like, I know he obviously has a really high reputation, and he's a few more kind of... He'll have a good, probably, career at this level and stuff, or higher, whatever. But it is interesting to kind of opt out at the same time when you're... kind of back at that pinnacle again, where you're like,
are you leaving on a high, or are you leaving just before the high?
Yeah,
you know,
and it's just that, like, but even from a professional point of view, like, you'd think, like, oh, I'm here now, I can, this will be the real challenge here, I'm performing at the top of the game, and to opt out is very interesting. It's really like, I can almost see, you know, the way you can almost see things from a human level, like, you're like, yeah, well, of course, he's like 40 and he's like loads of money, and like, he'll just go and really enjoy himself for 12 months or whatever. But it just doesn't seem to be the way people in football at that level are wired. Like, it's just the relentless pursuit of it. Like, or, you know, even whatever we talk about, things like with, like, Kieran McGeaney and GEA, like, was like not at a season off in like 25, 30 years or whatever it is. It's just that constant go, go, go. Just to walk away is very interesting.
Because the second time he's kind of surprised us, I did think that when they got relegated with Ipswich, he would take the next available job in the Premier League, because there was no guarantee that Ipswich would come back up. So that was one surprising move. And now this is the second one, really. This is the time when you'd expect him to stay. The previous one was the time when you'd expect him to actually leave the football club. So we will see what Kieran McKenna's future is in football, if there is one, in the near term. We have some more on the Republic of Ireland. Hugely disappointing results last night, Eve, given how they played.
Indeed. So last night's 1-0 loss to France saw the girls in green finish third in their World Cup qualifying group. But crucially, Ireland will be seeded in the playoff draw tomorrow week and will face a team from League C of the Nations League. Potential opponents include Hungary, Greece, Romania, Belarus, Kosovo, Lithuania, Croatia and Kazakhstan. And then former Ireland international Julianne Russell, speaking on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, believes that this squad has what it takes to get the job done.
Yeah, I definitely think it's much more balanced. There's positions all over the pitch that the subs can come on, and you're kind of, you don't know who's going to start, I suppose, like between Abby Larkin and Emily Murphy. People probably weren't sure who Carla would go with after Abby Larkin's incredible performance down in Portiquiv. Similarly with Jessu, she's such a talent. So it's not, as you said, we're not just relying on Katie and Denise. There's talent throughout the squad now, which is brilliant to see. So I think there's still young talent coming through. So I'm just excited to see how the group continue to progress. And yeah, hopefully that come October, they can get the job done.
We'll have more on this with Sue Ronan from 8pm tonight. James Middleton has been in touch to say the Katie Taylor fight is even more extraordinary when you consider the prices. When I got to the top of the queue, I had the opportunity to buy two tickets for €766 each.
Bit steep.
Is there dynamic pricing, or is that what happens? I don't fully understand how that works, but
it's probably like a VIP package and all
maybe,
of this.
Yeah. The golden tickets that are the last ones available when something sells out, perhaps. That's quite extraordinary. I dare say most of the 40,000 have not paid anything close to that to be at Katie Taylor this year. We have a potential story here around Dublin hosting the Women's Champions League final.
Yeah, so the FAI has submitted its final bid dossier to UEFA to host the 2029 Women's Champions League final in Dublin. The Aviva Stadium is facing rival bids from Wales, France and Switzerland. The venue staged the Europa League finals in 2011 and 2024 and will host 7 matches there for Euro 2028.
Now then on to Everton.
Yeah, they're in some hot water. So Everton say they're surprised and angry after being ordered to pay Burnley more than £35 million in compensation. This comes after they were sued over breaking Premier League financial rules in the 2021-22 season. Burnley, who were relegated that season, argue the breach impacted their chances of staying up. Now, Everton have appealed against the decision, saying that the ruling sets a dangerous and unworkable precedent.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah. I kind of agree with Everton.
I fully agree with Everton. This is ridiculous.
It's like, where do you draw what kind of butterfly wing? How far down can you go with that? Can the players of Burnley start suing because it affected their career earnings?
Yeah, but it's does it have an effect on the Southampton spying scandal? Should they actually have got their promotion and then they decided to actually pay Middlesbrough in the aftermath of it all? I don't know.
Isn't it that sort of thing? I've definitely seen it online before about, like, you know, random event happens and it's like, outcome, punish Everton.
They always do seem to be at the wrong end of all of these decisions.
It's just incredible. But yeah.
There has been a big friendly at Talca Park announced for the summer, Eve.
So Shelburne have announced a friendly with Celtic at Tulke Park this summer. The Scottish champions will travel to Dublin for the game, which is on July 7th. And then Shelburne CEO Tomás Quinn said that fixtures of this calibre provide valuable preparation for our squad ahead of our upcoming European campaign, while also creating a special experience for our fans and the wider football community.
We have the Women's Six Nations Player of the Championship announced.
And it's Ireland flanker Aoife Wafer. She has been named for the second year running as the Guinness Women's Six Nations Player of the Tournament. The 23-year-old Wexford native is the first women's rugby player to achieve this feat. She secured a substantial 40% of the fan vote. And in this year's championship, she scored 5 tries, made 78 carries, 5 turnovers and beat 20 defenders.
So yeah, quite remarkable.
Well deserved. Back.
Yeah, absolutely. On men's rugby then, we've got some harsh words about the setup.
So former Leinster hooker James Tracy has been giving a scathing analysis of the IRFU on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning. He was speaking after it was announced that James Lowe's contract negotiations with Leinster broke down and he will be leaving after 9 years with the province. With Irish Rugby's governing body readjusting how they award national contracts, a deal wasn't reached with Lowe and he's set to miss next year's World Cup. Tracy believes that weakening Leinster is not the way to strengthen the other three provinces.
I think they've pushed it too far in terms of how much they're cutting back on, you know, the only team that's competed at the top end of Europe. To be able to compete at that top end, you need to have the likes of James Lowe's in your squad and good NIQs. And there's a world, and I see it from the point of view of the other provinces, that like, you know, we need a bit of love as well, and I get that, but I don't see how making the team, our best Irish team at the moment, worse is, you know, the best way to move all four provinces forward. And like, that's how it feels to me, whether that's a biased point of view. You know, that's just kind of where I sit on it. It just feels like they're trying to weaken. They're trying. They are, by default, weakening Leinster in an attempt to make the other provinces catch up in, I suppose, no other better words.
Yeah, like, obviously that's not what Irish Rugby are trying to do here. IRFU are not trying to make things even in Irish Rugby by, you know, picking off one of Leinster's best talents and allowing them to move abroad. But it's a fairly good point that if part of this is, you know, the reduction in funds for Leinster Rugby, then that just can't be the full stop on this, that there has to be an increase of funds for the other three provinces. Like, this all has to be part of an equilibrium here. They can't just, you know, kill Leinster just to make things a little bit more even in the country.
But yeah, so that's him. So when does he go?
Before next season.
So end of the season, he's out of Ireland, reckoning, yeah, everything then. So like, you kind of, there's no way that decision's made without Andy Farrell's say so. In the same week, like, he's signed a new deal. There's no way they kind of go, ah, he's gone. I don't know. That notion of it being something that it's a specific or even consequential weakening, like, I don't think that's been, I don't know if I'd believe that wholly. I don't think it's a top-down decision, obviously.
I would say, if I were to guess, Andy Farrell would definitely be pushing for James Lowe to stay. Like, just speaking selfishly about his team, he would want another option, another warm body there for the World Cup next year. So that's one more year on the deal. Look, the likelihood is that a man of 33 years of age who turns 34 next month, so 35 by the World Cup, may not be playing his career best rugby going into next year's World Cup. But you never know. You know, there might have been a control of minutes. I know that he would have been paid per the minutes he played quite handsomely compared to some of his teammates. But it might just have been worth it for someone of James Lowe's talents. The bottom line is that we don't really know. And I'd say Andy Farrell would have liked to have seen that materialise. He would have liked the IRFU to take a chance on this, because he might just have been an important player for Ireland in next year's World Cup. But I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, it's an interesting way. I don't know. I'm interested in how you see the dynamic. I would have thought that everything was done to, not necessarily his requests, but with Andy Farrell's, I would imagine his input carries a lot of weight with these things. So you kind of, I expect it wasn't a decision taken lightly by that extension.
No.
So I don't know if it's anything pernicious about it, or kind of, surely it'll have a, I suppose, some sort of balancing of it. But by the same token, I guess everyone who's a Leinster fan is an Ireland fan. And if the decision is being made with other provinces in mind, then it's ultimately all feeds back in that loop to what improves Ireland. So I guess you kind of have to, at some point, you have to take a bit of pain for that sort of collective gain. at the same time. I know you're saying like he could be a useful player, and he certainly over the next 15 months or whatever in terms of Leinster's next season and then Ireland, it would be better to have him than not have him. But you're kind of like, I suppose that's not necessarily good policy to be working along those lines.
Yeah, and invest maybe in younger players maybe, and that's the way Leinster want to go. There's a finite amount of cash there. Definitely not pernicious. I would agree with that point. We have two more stories, Eve. First of all, on the tennis, what's going on here?
So former world number 3 Grigor Dimitrov will play the men's ATP Challenger 75 in Dublin next week. This will be the largest men's tennis event in Ireland since 2008. And 23-year-old Dylan Lehman from Belfast won the tournament wildcard playoff today and will contend the qualifiers, which begin this Sunday at Elm Park.
And finally, some really sad news from Irish athletics.
Yes, that Irish Olympic runner Ciarán O'Leonard has passed away suddenly at the age of 38. The Cork native reached the final of the 1500 metres at the 2011 World Championships and competed at the Olympics in London the following year.
Yeah, this is awful. Ciarán is somebody that we've had on the show multiple times. Certainly the most memorable conversation I had with Ciarán was around the Paris Games. And he was talking about the 1500 metre final. And obviously there were some big name, protagonists going head to head in this. And then when he was previewing it, he threw out the name Cole Hocker, who I'd never heard of. I'm sure like your Carl Dennehy's would have heard of Cole Hocker and be very familiar with him. But certainly I, a casual, had not heard of Cole Hocker. And he said, watch this guy. I know him from Oregon. He's going to do something special in this race. And Cole Hocker produced one of the shocks of the track meet at the Olympic Games and ended up winning gold. His interview after his disappointment at London 2012 on TV was absolutely astonishing as well. There was real emotional depth. Ciarán O'Leonard didn't know him overly well, just as I say, solely through the medium of Zoom and having him on the show. There was a lot to the man, and always an amazing contributor. So desperately, desperately sad news. We pass on all our best to Ciarán O'Leonard's friends and family. There was one other text in that I must get to. Ciarán has said, lads, in light of the Burnley case, what's the opinion on the outstanding Manchester City breaches and possible implications? The holding answer to that, Ciarán, is we don't know. And we don't know when, we don't know what, we don't know why, we don't know what the hell is going on with Manchester City. The news round has been brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.